This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Picture this. You're standing in the Department of Radiology at Shanghai Huashan Hospital in China.
Okay, setting the scene.
Yeah, and it's a room illuminated almost entirely by the glow of these high-resolution monitors. I mean, there's no old-school physical film being clipped onto light boxes anywhere in sight.
Right, it's all digital now.
Exactly. So you're watching a radiologist sitting at a workstation, and seamlessly, with just like a few quick clicks, they pull up a patient's historical CT scans right next to their most recent MRI.
Which, if you're just walking past, might look like standard modern computing. Yeah. Like, it looks as simple as having two internet browser windows open side by side on your laptop.
Yeah, it looks totally mundane. But here is the invisible magic happening behind those screens. That patient actually visited completely different hospital campuses for those two scans.
Oh, wow.
Right. In the past, those images were totally trapped. They were locked away on completely separate, disconnected servers at each individual campus.
And that was a massive logistical bottleneck that plagued the system for years. So that quiet scene, you know, that seamless side-by-side comparison of medical imaging across different hospital locations, it actually perfectly illustrates the foundational challenge of medical AI today.
Okay, let's unpack this, because that organizational plumbing is exactly our mission for today's deep dive.
Yes, absolutely.
We are exploring a brilliantly detailed chapter provided by former lawmaker Kyungjin Kim, and it focuses entirely on the last mile of medical artificial intelligence, specifically looking at Chinese hospitals and beyond.
Because we're trying to figure out how a brilliant AI algorithm actually makes it out of a perfectly controlled research paper, right?
Exactly. How does it survive the chaotic, incredibly messy daily workflow of an actual hospital?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you really have to look at the sheer scale of what Shanghai Huashan Hospital actually had to do just to get those two scans on the same screen.
I mean, they couldn't just plug in a new monitor.
No, they had to completely demolish their old systems and rebuild a multi-campus imaging collaboration platform from scratch. The system was called SRC-020. Yeah, because before you can even dream of having a highly advanced AI analyze a tumor, the raw data has to actually arrive on the doctor's screen in a format the computer understands.
Which is definitely not a simple DIY project for a hospital IT department.
Not at all.
Former lawmaker Kim's chapter details this massive collaboration between the Chinese tech giant Huawei and Ruijin Hospital. And the goal was deploying medical AI directly into these active clinical settings.
And the major takeaway from their work is pretty staggering. This last mile, like the act of actually embedding the technology into a doctor's daily routine, is significantly harder and way more expensive than developing the core AI algorithm itself.
It's an absolute engineering nightmare, I imagine.
Completely. Think about the physical infrastructure. You have different hospital campuses operating with completely different storage servers.
Right.
They have different internet network bandwidths. They even have slightly different file formats for saving the exact same type of X-ray. So if that foundational data isn't perfectly standardized across the board, even a multi-billion dollar AI will fail at the absolute most basic task, which is just retrieving the patient's file.
So it's like trying to build a state-of-the-art magnetic levitation high-speed train system, but then realizing every single station in the city uses a slightly different width of train tracks.
That's a great way to look at it.
The AI is this shiny new train, but the hospital servers are the tracks. And if the tracks don't match up perfectly across the whole city, it doesn't matter how fast the train is, right? It isn't going anywhere.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. The foundation absolutely has to be uniform. But once those digital tracks are finally laid down and the medical images are unified, we start to see what this technology can genuinely achieve.
Right.
And we're seeing that AI in the hospital is no longer just a one-trick pony.
And here's where it gets really interesting. Because once the plumbing is fixed, the AI's capabilities just explode outward.
They really do.
Kim's materials point to a recent study in the journal NPJ Digital Medicine that maps out how AI is moving way beyond just identifying one single disease. Like, it's rapidly evolving into a multi-organ assistant.
The sheer breadth of what these advanced models are doing simultaneously across the human body is staggering.
Yeah.
We weren't just talking about a minor software upgrade for radiologists here.
Right, it's bigger than that.
Yeah, we're talking about a fundamental shift in diagnostic capability.
Let's break down some of the specific examples from the research, because honestly, it sounds like science fiction.
It does.
In prostate imaging, they're using cascading convolutional neural networks, this advanced image recognition AI, to scan complex, multi-layered MRIs and automatically flag clinically significant cancers.
Mm-hmm.
Then you jump over to breast imaging, and researchers have built diagnostic models that can do their job using just basic two-dimensional grayscale ultrasound images.
And what you have to realize is that the complexity of the data the AI is chewing on varies wildly from organ to organ.
How so?
Well, with the prostate MRI, the AI is essentially hunting for a specific geographic location in a static, high-resolution photograph.
Okay.
But then look at gastric endoscopy. The AI is analyzing something called narrowband imaging, or NBI.
What's that?
It's essentially using a specialized light filter on a camera to illuminate the tiny blood vessels in the stomach wall. The AI is using that specialized light to recognize the exact microscopic boundaries of early stomach cancer.
Wait, really?
Yeah, and it's doing that on real-time moving video.
That blows my mind. The AI is watching a live video feed from inside a patient's stomach and drawing borders around cancer cells in real time.
Yep.
And it doesn't stop there. It's doing cardiac MRIs to analyze the left ventricle of the heart in spot conditions like cardiac amyloidosis.
Incredible.
It's even reading basic CT scans to identify acute appendicitis, and it's actually getting so accurate that human doctors are trusting it to guide their surgical management.
So inside the reading room, the AI isn't just a prostate tool or a heart tool anymore. It spans across the nervous system, the stomach, the breast, the heart.
Right.
Which brings us to a massive systemic shift in how these artificial intelligence models are actually trained in the first place.
Oh, this is the concept VLM stuff, right?
Exactly. This is where Kim's chapter highlights something truly revolutionary called concept VLM.
Yes. This part of the research fascinated me. Concept VLM is a large vision language model.
Mm.
So for anyone unfamiliar with that, it's an AI that can look at a medical image and read clinical text at the same time, making connections between the two.
Right, merging the visual and the textual.
Historically, to get a medical AI to recognize cancer, you had to feed it gigantic, massive mountains of data, like millions of images.
Huge data sets, yeah.
But the research team behind Concept VLM figured out how to fine-tune a general AI into a specialized medical expert using only 1% of the total data set.
What's fascinating here is the mechanism behind how they achieved that massive leap in efficiency with so little data.
Right.
It's an approach called key concept learning.
Okay, let's unpack how that actually works. Because normally, you just dump a million photos into a computer and say, figure out what cancer looks like.
Right, trial and error on a massive scale.
But here, instead of just telling the AI, this whole image is cancer and this one isn't, they trained the model to reason using the actual conceptual units that human doctors use.
Exactly.
To me, it's like learning a completely new language. Instead of forcing a student to memorize the entire dictionary word by word, it's like teaching them the root words.
That's a great analogy.
Because once you know the root words, you can build any sentence. They're teaching the AI the fundamental biological root nerds that human clinicians use to build a diagnosis.
Precisely. By learning those fundamental concepts, the AI learned to logically reason its way across ophthalmology, pathology, and radiology data sets.
Wow.
And a model that requires minimal data to learn is incredibly valuable in places like massive Chinese hospital networks.
Why is that?
Because the sheer volume of data might vary wildly from a massive city campus down to a smaller rural clinic.
Okay, I have to push back here, though.
Sure, go ahead.
If it only takes 1% of the data to tune this AI, and it's really that efficient, why isn't every single hospital in the world doing this immediately? It sounds like an absolute silver bullet for medical tech.
This raises a very important question, and it's exactly why we have to read these academic breakthroughs with a critical eye.
There's always a catch.
Right. The catch is that Concept VLM relies entirely on a massive, almost impossible prerequisite. Every single hospital and every single department within that hospital has to have identical, standardized concept definitions and labeling systems.
Ah, I see. We're back to the different widths of the train tracks.
We are right back to the plumbing. The AI can learn those root words remarkably fast, but only if every single doctor in the entire hospital network agrees on exactly what those root words mean and how they are typed into the computer system.
Right. So if they don't mesh.
If the downtown campus defines or labels a biological concept, even slightly differently than the suburban campus, that 1% data trick completely falls apart. because the AI just gets confused by the conflicting definitions.
So what does this all mean? It means the radiology reading room is getting incredibly smart, but only if the humans running it are hyper-organized.
Exactly.
But I want to shift gears because former lawmaker Kim's chapter takes us out of the relatively quiet, controlled environment of the radiology reading room.
Yes, into the chaos.
Right. Let's walk down the hospital hall to the emergency room or the intensive care unit, because this is a loud, life or death environment where having too much data is actually a fatal problem.
The preoperative rooms and the ICUs are entirely different beasts. The sheer volume of continuous, real-time data pouring out of heart monitors, oxygen sensors, and blood pressure cuffs is overwhelming for the human brain to process continuously.
And it leads to a very dangerous psychological phenomenon called alert fatigue.
Yes, very dangerous.
Have you ever lived on a street where a neighbor's car alarm goes off constantly?
Oh, absolutely.
The first time it happens, you jump up and look out the window. But by the 50th time it happens, you just put in earplugs and go back to sleep, even if someone is actually out there stealing the car.
Exactly.
That exact same thing happens to medical staff. The monitors beep so often with false alarms that the nurses and doctors just start subconsciously ignoring the system entirely.
And in a hospital setting, ignoring that metaphorical car alarm means potentially missing a rare but absolutely fatal event, like a patient suddenly crashing and experiencing in-hospital mortality.
To fix this deadly noise problem, researchers built a fascinating two-stage early warning framework called AITTW, which stands for AI-Powered Tiered Early Warning.
Mm-hmm.
And the scope of the data they used is wild. They trained this system on 174,292 emergency department visits from three different hospitals across both China and the United States.
The deliberate inclusion of both Chinese and American hospitals in the training data is crucial here.
Why is that? It provides what we call external validation, proving that the AI isn't just memorizing the genetic or environmental quirks of a single local population. It proves the math works on human beings generally.
That's a great point. So the system works in two stages. Stage one is a machine learning model. The chapter notes it achieved an impressive accuracy score, an AUROC, of 0.84 to 0.91 for predicting in-hospital mortality.
And for anyone who doesn't spend their days reading statistical papers, AURC is essentially a grading scale for how well a model distinguishes between a true emergency and a false alarm.
Right.
A score of 0.5 is basically flipping a coin.
Right.
So hitting above 0.9 is like taking the hospital's prediction accuracy from a C- to a solid A.
And the practical result of that A grade is huge. The AI stratified the patient's risk, right?
Nah.
Dividing them into low, medium, and high risk.
Exactly.
In doing so, it raised the positive predictive value from the normal 9.8 to 18.8% range, all the way up to 32.5 to 40.5%. And crucially, it kept the low-risk negative predictive value above 98%.
To translate those numbers into the reality of the ER, it drastically reduced the number of times the system cried wolf.
Nice.
When the alarm went off, it was much more likely to be a real emergency, while the system still flawlessly caught the patients who were actually safe and stable.
But stage two is where this jumps from just being good math to sounding like actual science fiction.
Oh, this is the language model layer.
Yeah. For the second stage, they layered large language models on top of the system to act as a knowledge-based filter. We're talking about running an entire suite of massive AIs. MedGemma, DeepSeek V3, GPT 4.1, Baishuan M1, Llama 3.3, and Qwen 3.
That is a lot of computing power.
Right. All these models read the clinical data and then reevaluate the alert, basically voting on whether to categorize it as yes, no, or uncertain.
And the results were impressive. In validation, MedGemma maintained a 90.5% sensitivity and pushed that positive predictive value all the way up to 48.7%.
Think about that leap for a second. Almost half of all the alarms going off in the ICU are now genuinely critical emergencies, rather than just 1 in 10. That completely cures alert fatigue.
It really does.
Yeah.
And this isn't happening in isolation.
What do you mean?
Well, the chapter references a recent scoping review spanning 2020 to 2025 on preoperative evaluation. It shows AI is rapidly categorizing risk prediction, triage, and surgical workflow across the board.
Oh, wow.
Furthermore, we're seeing sepsis prediction making the exact same shift. Hospitals are moving away from fixed, rigid scoring rules and moving toward these dynamic, multimodal, intelligent models.
I have a major question here, though.
Go for it.
Why run so many different language models side by side? Like, why are they running DeepSeek and Llama and GPT and Majema all at the exact same time?
Seems redundant, right?
Yeah. Why wouldn't a hospital just pick whichever one is the smartest and save a massive amount of computing power and money?
Because clinical environments simply cannot afford to trust a single model's potential for error.
Right.
We've all seen language models hallucinate or confidently make up facts. In an ER, a hallucination means a patient dies.
That makes sense.
So the structure of running distinct, separate lineages of AI models concurrently rests on the premise of consensus. They act like a panel of consulting doctors.
Right, checking each other's work.
Exactly. If DeepSeek makes a bizarre computational error, Majema and Llama will catch it and filter it out. It's a digital safety net.
Okay, that makes total sense. They're fact-checking each other. And those language models are also doing something else that is absolutely critical.
Which is?
They translate raw statistical numbers into natural language explanations. Like, instead of just flashing a terrifying red light on a monitor, the AI can actually type out a sentence explaining why it thinks the patient is crashing.
That is a crucial feature.
Which leads perfectly into the final and maybe the most difficult hurdle we need to unpack today. The black box problem. Because it turns out, if the AI cannot explain why it made a medical decision, human doctors simply will not use it.
Trust is the ultimate currency in medicine. You can have the most accurate AI on earth, but if the doctor doesn't trust it, it's useless.
Right.
If you look back at that prostate cancer imaging study we discussed earlier, there is a truly shocking statistic about physician acceptance that Kim highlights.
I actually have the numbers right here. When the AI's diagnosis aligned with the human doctor's own clinical experience and gut feeling, the doctor accepted the AI's result 92% of the time.
A very high rate.
Yeah. But when the AI conflicted with the doctor's initial opinion, the doctor's acceptance of the AI's diagnosis plummeted to just 18%.
It drops straight off a cliff.
Yeah.
And the reason for that steep drop is clear. The AI fundamentally functions as a black box.
Right.
It spits out an answer, but the physician has absolutely no way of knowing what textures, what shapes, or what biological criteria the computer model actually used to judge a lesion as cancerous.
It's exactly like having a really strict middle school math teacher.
How so?
Well, it doesn't matter if you get the right answer on the test. The doctor is the math teacher demanding that the AI show its work. If the AI just writes down the final number without explaining the steps it took to get there, it fails the test.
That's very true.
Hmm.
Which brings us to the laboratory, specifically the microbiology lab, where the stakes for this kind of trust are uniquely high.
Mm-hmm.
Kim's chapter dives into something called explainable artificial intelligence, or XAI. To see how we might finally force the AI to show its work.
Right. Let's visualize this. Imagine a lab researcher culturing a bacterial colony on a petri dish.
Okay.
The AI scans a photo of the dish and spits out a number. It says there is a 79% probability that this bacteria is Escherichia coli or E. coli.
In the past, that 79% was the end of the story. Take it or leave it. But explainable AI or XAI attempts to show the math teacher the work using two different mathematical techniques.
The first technique is called SHAP, and it's based on game theory. Now, think of game theory here like a college group project where four students get a final grade of an A. SHAP calculates exactly how much credit each individual student deserves for that A.
I like that analogy.
So in the lab, the researcher gets a visual bar chart showing that the size of the bacteria colony added a specific amount of credit to that 79% score, but the shape of the colony's border actually subtracted credit.
It's incredibly precise. The catch with SHAP, however, is the massive computational load.
Because it's calculating so much.
Yeah, because it is theoretically consistent and painstakingly calculates the credit for every single variable. As you add more visual features for the AI to consider, the math gets incredibly heavy and drastically slows down the computer system.
Ah. So to fix the speed issue, there's the alternative technique, which is called LIME.
Right.
LIME is computationally very fast and light. Instead of calculating everything perfectly, it works by just slightly tweaking or poking the input features, like changing a pixel here or there, and then watches how the AI reacts to the changes.
But there's a problem with LIME, too.
Yeah. Because it's an estimation, the values fluctuate. If you run the exact same image through LIME twice, you might get slightly different contribution numbers each time.
And in a microbiology lab, these aren't just fun academic exercises.
Right.
If an AI misdiagnoses an infectious disease on a petri dish, it isn't just about giving the wrong drug to that one single patient. That lab result dictates the overall antibiotic prescriptions for the entire hospital wing.
Oh, wow.
It impacts broad citywide infection control strategies.
So let me get this straight. If HUP takes way too much time and computing power to be useful in an emergency, and Lyme gives a slightly different answer every single time you run it, aren't we just trading a perfectly opaque black box for a really blurry window?
Honestly, yes.
Neither one seems completely trustworthy.
That is the perfect way to phrase the dilemma. Explainable AI right now is absolutely a work in progress, and the issue detailed in the research isn't just about the mathematical sophistication of the software itself.
What else is it?
It's actually a human resources question. Do the laboratory researchers, who are actively processing hundreds of critical samples a day, actually have the time, the patience, and the highly specialized statistical training required to sit down and interpret a complex SHAP bar chart during a fast-paced shift?
I'm guessing probably not. I mean, just because you give someone a highly detailed topographic map doesn't mean they actually have the time to read it while they're driving 70 miles an hour down the highway.
Exactly. Whether the path to making an AI more technically accurate and the path to making it easily explainable to a human are actually moving in the same direction, that is still an open question in the field.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Bridging the gap between the pristine research lab where the model is built and the messy hospital ward where it is used daily remains the ultimate challenge.
So what does this all mean for you listening? We've traveled a massive distance today.
We really have.
We went from the struggle of just laying the digital server tracks at Shanghai Huashan Hospital to view images side by side. We looked at how researchers are teaching AI medical root words with Concept VLM using just 1% of the data.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen how running a massive panel of language models like DeepSeek and Magemma can act as a digital safety net to filter out the deafening noise of ER alarms.
Curing that alert fatigue.
Right. And finally, we've seen how researchers are desperately trying to force AI to show its work in the microbiology lab using imperfect tools like SHAP and Lyme.
The overarching theme of former lawmaker Kim's chapter is undeniable. A mathematically perfect, hyper-accurate AI is completely useless without organizational integration and actual human trust.
Totally.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it leaves us with something quite profound to consider.
What's that?
Right now, we are forcing artificial intelligence to explain its incredibly complex reasoning using our limited human concepts. Things like the border of a cell or the color of a tissue.
Right, our root words.
Exactly.
Mm.
But as these models become exponentially smarter, what happens when the AI discovers new, entirely alien indicators of disease hidden in an MRI?
Oh, wow.
Indicators that humans don't even have words for yet. Will we keep forcing the AI to dumb itself down to our vocabulary? Or will doctors eventually have to learn how to think like the AI, permanently changing the logic of human medicine forever?
That is a wild, terrifying, and exciting thought to end on. A whole new medical language we haven't even invented yet. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the true last mile of medical AI. We'll catch you on the next one.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.